The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 9, text number 33. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari. Recorded on October 14th, 2008, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
We are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 9, text number 33.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 King
Punar Brahmana Punya Bhakta Rajarshayastata Anityam Masukam Lokam Imam Prapya Bhajashvamam.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. How much more this is so of the righteous Brahmins, the devotees, and the saintly kings. Therefore, having come to this temporary miserable world, engage in loving service unto me. In the previous verse, Krishna was saying that anyone who takes shelter of him, they will attain the supreme destination, even if they are low of lower birth. And now he is saying, what to speak of, it's even more true of those who are already advanced. So he's making the point, and we will discuss in the purport, read and discuss from the purport. In this material world, there are classifications of people. But after all, this world is not a happy place for anyone. It is clearly stated here, anityam asukam lokam. This world is temporary and full of miseries, not habitable for any sane gentleman. This world is declared by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be temporary and full of miseries. Some philosophers, especially the Mayavadi philosophers, say that this world is false, but we can understand from Bhagavad Gita that the world is not false, it is temporary. There is a difference between temporary and false. This world is temporary, but there is another world which is eternal. This world is miserable, but the other world is eternal and blissful. Arjuna was born in a saintly royal family. To him also the Lord says, take to my devotional service and come quickly back to Godhead, back home. No one should remain in this temporary world full as it is with miseries. Everyone should attach himself to the bosom of the Supreme Personality of Godhead so that he can be eternally happy. The devotional service of the Supreme Lord is the only process by which all problems of all classes of men can be solved. Everyone should therefore take to Krishna consciousness and make his life perfect.
Mandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Manakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunatan Vita Tam Sajiva. Sadaitam Zavadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha.
So, the problem is we doubt it, that this world is miserable. This problem is it. We still think this is a world of enjoyment. We are deluded in this way. I just spent the last week down at Rig Hospital seeing how miserable this material world is. Everywhere people walking around with their heads and tubes coming out of their nose. I mean, all kinds of horrible situations for a whole week. That's all I've seen. But yet all the hospital workers, you know, they're carrying on just like anybody else trying to enjoy the material world. Flirting in the elevator, you know. Regular old enjoy the material world routine. So, you know, it just shows you how powerful the material nature is to make people think, no matter how grotesque and horrible the material world can be right in front of your very nose, but still they think they can enjoy it. This shows you the great power of the deluding energy of the Lord. How powerful is that deluding energy of Krishna? That even though everywhere there's suffering here, suffering there, suffering to the right, suffering to the left, suffering up, suffering everywhere, suffering in all directions, but still the living entity is stubbornly thinking, I will enjoy. Why? Does he do that? Do you know why he doesn't? Because the actual nature of the living entity is to enjoy. That's his real nature, to enjoy. Ananya Maya, Anandamaya, Vyasa. The nature of the living being is enjoyment. So he's meant to enjoy. Just like a fish is meant to be in the water, is it? That's his natural position. So it's natural that people will try to enjoy because that's their nature to enjoy. But the problem is they're not very intelligent because they're trying to enjoy that which is not enjoyable instead of thinking, this is not enjoyable, let me find the real enjoyment, you see. The philosopher, the seeker of self-realization, he's intelligent, he understands, I want to enjoy, that's my nature, but I see everywhere there is misery, so let me find out where is the actual enjoyment. But the fools and rascals, 99.9% of the population, they think, well, let me try to enjoy this. Just like there was one novel written back in the 60s. By Richard Farina was his name. It was very interesting title. He said, I've been down so long, it looks like up to me. In other words, I've been suffering for so long, and now I take suffering to be enjoyment. And that's actually what they do. That title was a very good, I didn't read the book, but I saw the title. And the title actually says a very powerful, it's a very poignant way of describing, potent way of describing the material mentality. They've been suffering for millions and millions of births, so now, because their real nature is enjoyment, even though it's not enjoyable, they imagine it to be enjoyable because they can't imagine a world without enjoyment. You see? To them, a world without enjoyment is inconceivable because their nature to enjoy. So they imagine suffering to be enjoyment. Smoking cigarettes, you know. All the things they do to enjoy, you know. Jumping off of skyscrapers with bungee cords, you know. Try to enjoy some squeeze and pleasure out of this material existence. But someone who's a little sober, who's a little intelligent, he says, wait a minute. There's got to be some place beyond this place. There's too many miseries here you can't really escape. You know, you got to get old, you got to get sick, you have to die. You can't really avoid those things. So it just doesn't fit, you know. My nature to enjoy and the miseries that are forced on me, there's an incompatibility here. There's something wrong. An intelligent person, he understands. A philosopher, you see, he understands. There's something screwy going on here. It doesn't fit. It doesn't work. So then he seeks that person, he seeks spiritual knowledge. He seeks enlightenment. And if he's really sincere, he's willing to do anything and everything to attain it, then the Lord within his heart, it was called Shaitya Guru, that Lord within his heart will bring him into contact with an external spiritual master who then guides him, enlightens him, brings him to the platform of transcendental enjoyment. You see? A bona fide spiritual master is not just some mundane philosopher, you know, gives you some concepts. He actually elevates you to the transcendental platform. He has the potency to pull you out of the material nature into the spiritual nature, but you have to be willing to go. You have to be surrendered. If you're fighting and kicking and screaming, then forget it. You have to be submissive. But the bona fide spiritual master actually has the power, the potency to elevate you into the transcendental world. By his mercy, you see, you can be delivered from the birth, death, old age, and disease. How's that possible? Because it's not the ultimate reality. Even though it's going on around us, we call it, Copenhagen. Even though it's going on all around us, a million people or whatever, going through birth, death, old age, and disease, this is not the ultimate reality. This is a covering. That's all. It's a covering of the actual reality. You have to open the door of perception. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santaksa daiva hidayeshu valokayanti yang shama shundaram achintya gunas varupam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. If you will anoint your eyes with these, they're a very special ointment, very special salve, unguent, another word for it in English. It's interesting. The Sanskrit word is anjana, and the word unguent is there. It's an obvious etymological derivation. The Sanskrit has actually made its way into English. Angana, unguent, anjana. So, you have to anoint your eyes with that very, very special ointment known as frame anjana. The ointment of love of God. So, where do you pick it up? The corner drugstore? Where do you get it? It is being dispensed by the transcendental pharmacist. The spiritual master is the transcendental pharmacist. And he is dispensing this prem anjana. For those who want to get prescription, he is dispensing. He will write you that he is the physician and the pharmacist, all rolled into one. The bona fide spiritual master, the physician and the pharmacist, he will give you the prescription and he will fill it also. You don't have to make two stops. One-stop shopping. Actually, our Srila Prabhupada, he was also a pharmacist in his house otherly. And he became even a greater pharmacist by starting ISKCON. ISKCON is actually a pharmacy business. You know that? This is a pharmaceutical operation. Delivering one drug, premanjana. You see? There's only one drug, premanjana, being dispensed in this pharmacy. So, how do you apply that premanjana? Do you just take the tube and squirt it on your eyes, or how do you do it, you know? You're supposed to anoint your eyes with the seva of love of God. How will you do them? Actually, this is a very unusual type of ointment. You put it in your ears. And you have to take it submissively. If you did, you take it non-submissively to go in one ear and ooze out the other, you'll lose the premanjana. But if you'll take it through both ears into your and deep, deep, deep into your heart, you see, then that prem anjana, it will come to your eyes and your eyes will become transformed. Your eyes will become lotus eyes. And you'll be able to see Krishna directly, face to face. You know, Prabhupada ordered me to do that? A direct order from the Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Sankarshan Das. He said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. So I have to obey my spiritual master. So the only way I can do that is prem anjana, you see. So, therefore I'm applying this ointment by hearing, by, of course, by, when I'm speaking, I also get to hear. That's the advantage of speaking. You are hearing, I'm also hearing. And the amazing thing for me is I give so many lectures, but they're never the same. I never give the same lecture twice because Krishna always inspires me. Prabhupada inspires me. According to the audience, I sometimes say that actually the audience really gives the class. Because according to your degree of receptivity, according to your the degree of the submissiveness of your hearing, I become inspired to speak. If you're bored, you're falling asleep, you're looking here and there, you're looking at your watch, when's this going to be over, then, you know, I don't really feel like saying very much, you see what I'm saying? But if you're, I can see in your faces, the face is the index of the mind, if you're eager to hear, you're like drinking it in, you're going, wow, this is really nectar, this is really profound. If I see that kind of, you know, look on your face, then I become more and more inspired, you see. So, this is the process. We have to hear the message coming down from the previous acharyas. We are in the Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya, Prabhupada, Sampradaya. We are in the most powerful, potent branch of the Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya, Sampradaya. That is the Prabhupada branch. Of the Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya, Sampradaya. Most powerful branch. This branch is so full with bhakti shakti that it can revolutionize this entire planet, actually. That is the potency of Prabhupada. None of his godbrothers, these other Gaudiyas, they didn't have that much bhakti shakti. That's why we don't advise you go somewhere else to hear. People who are envious of Prabhupada and want to minimize what he is doing. Don't go outside of this Prabhupada Sampradaya. Hear from Prabhupada and hear from those who are loyally serving Prabhupada. That's where you should hear. Don't go elsewhere to hear. If other people are envious of Prabhupada's success and they're trying to steal some of his glory, take those persons who are humbly speaking on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, who don't try to change or criticize Prabhupada, because he is the most powerful acharya. He is the preeminent acharya for the modern age. There is none on his level. So, I can ask now if there's any questions. Yeah.
So how much is it recommended one hears in order to be able to...
Yes, 24 hours a day is pretty good. Someone, actually, Prabhupada one time said, you should spend 24 hours a day in studying. That's another form of hearing, reading, you see. He said, always be engaged in studying and always be engaged in doing service. You may say, well, how is that possible, you know? Sometimes the temple president says, well, Prabhu, we need you to do this, 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 this. Well, where's my time to read? We need this, 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 this. You know, sometimes that's there in managing a temple, you know. Devotees say, but I want more time to read. And the Prabhupada said, always be studying and always be doing service. So how do you do both at the same time? I mean, how do you study 24 hours and do service 24 hours? How do you possibly do that? Do you have a little, you know, book holder, you walk around reading the book while you're doing the floor? Or how do you do that? That's not very practical. You wouldn't do a good job on the floor. So how do you do that? Well, it's a very simple explanation. If you take a course, for example, chemistry course in the university, you're in high school also, you have two sections of the course. You have the lab and you have the lecture. So both are considered part of your learning experience, you see. When you sit in the lecture, you hear the technical points, you're taking notes, you're studying, you're learning concepts. Then you go to the laboratory and you put them into practice. Now, are you not also learning and studying while you're doing when you're applying the theories? Of course you are. When you actually go to the lab and you apply the theories that you've heard in the lecture, then they become realized. Oh yes, H2O does equal water. I just did it in the test tube, see? So in this way, when you hear the philosophy, you read the books, you hear lectures, at the same time you do practical service. You offer an RT, you sweep the floor, you clean the dishes, you cut vegetables, you go out and distribute books, work hard at your job, earn some money, donate it to the temple. All of these things are types of service that we can do, you see. Raise a family, raise children to be Krishna conscious, so many things. So by applying this knowledge that you're reading, then you actually get to experience what you read about. You understand? And then it enhances. So in this way, the hearing process becomes 24 hours a day. Even if you're out, you're working your job and offering part of your income to the temple, you're thinking, wow, here I am getting to work for Krishna. This is real. I'm actually doing it. I heard about it. Yad kadoshi yad asnasi yad dahosi dadasi yad. That whatever you do, do it for Krishna. And now here I am working and I've made a vow that I'm only going to spend this money in a Krishna conscious way. I'm not going to spend money for sense gratification anymore. And now I'm feeling so inspired in my work that I'm actually doing it for Krishna. You see? So in this way, you have to learn how to turn everything into part of the hearing process. 24 hours a day. Yes.
If you only are in the lab because you know many temples the brahmacharis have so little time, so they have to cook and they have not, you know, the opportunity to read.
Yes. Yes.
So then you have no study, only on the lab. You know you can.
Well, I know. I used to be in that situation. I was one time a brahmachari in our Houston temple. This is just before Prabhupada's disappearance, actually. But Prabhupada actually said, send everybody, keep one bamak of the temple and send everybody out to distribute books. So I was the only man at the temple. I had to offer all the aartis. I had to cook the deity sweets. I had to wash all the dishes. I had to answer the phone. I had to answer the door. I did everything, all by myself, the whole day. It's amazing, but I didn't have time to. I did take a little when I would stir the burfi, I would hold a book. But I can tell you this. We had just two or three cassette tapes. We didn't have the whole, you know. We didn't have all the MP3s. You know, we just had a few cassettes from LA. You know, we got a few sitting around, and actually, I only had like two or three lectures. Maybe I think, as far as I remember, I only had one cassette tape with a lecture on each side. And for a whole year, I listened to that, the front and back of that cassette, and I can tell you, I never got tired of it. Because I was totally absorbed in service, that I just heard that lecture hundreds of times, and every time I heard it, it got sweeter, and I realized more and more things by hearing that lecture, because I was so absorbed in service. Actually, even if you don't have a lot of time to sit down and study, even if you can spend 15 minutes every day, I know when those tapes first started coming out from L.A., we had a lot of service to do. There was no time to sit down. I wanted to sit down and take notes off the tapes. We didn't have the Veda base in those days, you know. You could just go shh, shh, shh. I wanted to sit down and take all the note down and, you know, take exact quotes in my brahmachari notebook. I had a whole stack of them. I filled them up over the years. A whole stack of notes. I still have those in a transcendental treasure chest. My brahmachari days. All my notes, my study notes are still there. It's a brahmachari for 14 years. But where was the time to sit down with the tapes? You know, we were doing service, and then I would go out and do prasadam distribution and preaching on the University of Florida campus. It was a great program. We made a lot of devotees on the campus. And I was going out every afternoon and preaching to the students, distributing prasadam. And so where was the time to sit down with the tapes, all these wonderful tapes that were just being released for the first time from Los Angeles, Prabhupada's morning walks on Venice Beach. It was the first time anybody ever heard all this stuff. The first time we heard Prabhupada challenging the scientists, you see. It was all brand new and it was so exciting. And where's the time to sit down with it? Well, I figured out an easy way to do it. I said, I'm not going to take lunch anymore, that's all. And all the devotees went to take lunch. I sat down and went to the Brahmachari Ashram. It was completely peaceful. There was no distractions. I was there in the Brahmachari Ashram with those tapes, taking notes down. Every day I skipped lunch. And I tell you, I didn't starve to death. I must have had a bigger breakfast to make up for it, but I gained so much knowledge from all that note taking, and then I would go to the campus and I would use it on the students, and they would go, "Wow!" You know. So where there's a will, there's a way. You can reduce, you know, you can reduce your eating. Just eat more at breakfast and skip. That's what I did. I'd eat so I'd have time to sit and study. I would eat, skip lunch every day. I mean, there's so many things you can do if you're really determined. And if you're really, really determined, you can, you know, right now when I'm back at our ashram in Austin, I want to memorize verses. That's one of my, because I lecture, you know, all the time. And the more you know verses when you're a lecturer, it can give more authoritative lectures. So I went, you know, so where's the time? I'm so busy doing this and that. So what I've found is I have 10 minutes between making the offering and offering the Mangalarti. I have 10 minutes every day. So I use those 10 minutes to memorize verses every day. But then I figure, well, if I can just come down a little bit early to wake the deities, you know, like instead of coming right at 4:10, you know, come not at, you know, 10 till 4 or 5 minutes till 4, then I can get 20 minutes or 25 minutes every day with no distractions just to go over shlokas and memorize shlokas. And so I've been doing that, and I've, you know, it's helped me a lot. Just 10, even 10, 15, 20 minutes a day, regulated every day at the same time, 10, 15, 20 minutes. You'd be amazed at how much you can learn. If you do it every day, just a few minutes, very regulated way, you'd be surprised how much you can learn and retain. So it's not so much a matter of not the time, it's a matter of the determination, really. If one is determined to read these books and know these books, Krishna will help. And there's a great encouragement from Srila Prabhupada. He wrote one of his disciples, he said, as much as possible, read, chant, and preach. He said, if you do this, very soon Krishna consciousness will be the only religion in the world. So if you want to be a revolutionary, if you want to revolutionize this planet and bring the flag of Hanuman in every capital in the world, then as much as possible, read, chant, and preach. These three things. Next question. Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned in the class that there's actually no happiness in this world, but we see that the regular kamis, they are getting some taste out of their material activities.
Yes, yes. So what is the question?
They don't seem to connect it to the suffering that's resulting from that. So how can we convince them that it's actually connected?
Yes. Well, even if you can't convince them they're suffering, you should point out to them that their enjoyment is temporary. And actually, if enjoyment is temporary, it's not really pure enjoyment. It's enjoyment tinged with suffering. Just like, for example, some boy, you know, he gets a really beautiful girlfriend he's enjoying, but then some fortune teller tells him, well, you know, in 3 days she's going to go up with somebody else. Can he really enjoy those 3 days with this most beautiful girl, knowing that in 3 days she's going to go up with somebody else? Can he really enjoy it? No. So as soon as someone realizes that my happiness here is temporary, then he can't really enjoy it. Or another example, just like you're working hard all year at the, you know, your job, and you know you get a vacation. Day in, day out, week after week, month after month, you know, but I have a vacation. I'm going to go to Bali or something like that, you know. So when you go to Bali, you think, oh, this is great, but then you start noticing, oh boy, in you know, 8 days I have to go back to my job again. So your enjoyment is not pure enjoyment. It's enjoyment tinged with suffering, the thought of having to go back to the job again. Of course, you're a devotee, though, dovetailing your job in Krishna's service, that's another thing. But this is a mundane example. So if you can point out to them, you may be enjoying, but it's temporary. Then once they can really understand it's temporary, then they really understand it's miserable. As soon as happiness is temporary, therefore it must be miserable. Because we don't want temporary enjoyment. We want eternal enjoyment. Temporary enjoyment means enjoyment tinged with misery, the fear of when it will end. So that ruins it. It's not pure happiness anymore. It's happiness mixed with suffering. So the point is, every type of happiness in this world is mixed with varying degrees of suffering. There is no such thing as pure enjoyment until you come to the platform of Krishna consciousness. They may not realize it, But deep within their heart, they know it, and they can't really fully enjoy it. There's no such thing as pure enjoyment in this material world. Therefore, when Krishna says, you know, abrahma bhuvana aloka punaravartin arjuna, it's a fact. Simply miserable bliss. There's just varying degrees of illusory happiness, that's all. Yeah.
Then some might answer that if you're just able to be present in the now, then you're just in that happiness. You don't have to think about, you know, what is in the future. And when that happens,
right.
Ends,
they say, just be here and now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They say, just be here now. But that's artificial. It's like the proverbial ostrich who sticks his head in the sand when the fox is coming to eat him. I'm just going to be here now, putting my head in the sand. Oh, this sand is so nice. It's a foolish thing. You haven't solved any problem. You're just trying to forget, you know, the misery. That's all. The misery doesn't, you can't make the misery go away by trying to block it out, saying, I'm just going to forget about the future. It doesn't work. It's like, you know, you don't have the money to pay your rent, you're going to be evicted tomorrow, you'll be out on the street in the middle of the winter, and you're thinking, well, I'm just going to forget about it tonight. I'm going to take my last money and go buy a pizza and a case of beer, and I'm just going to forget about it and have a great time. Doesn't work. Trying to block it out by just saying, I'm going to live in the present. It doesn't get rid of it. It's artificial. If you want to get rid of it, then you have to really get rid of it by transcending this material nature, which is not you. Your real nature is your eternal full of knowledge and bliss, so you have to come to your real position. And then you will truly be happy. Anyone else? Yeah. Yeah, I'll have you next. Yeah.
Can you be happy with Brahman realization? When you realize Brahman...
Brahman realization? Yes, there is a happiness in Brahman realization. But it's not very high-level happiness. Because it's an illusion. It's also illusory happiness. Actually, Brahman realization is another type of illusory happiness. Material sense gratification is illusory happiness. And Brahman realization is also illusory happiness because you have the illusion that you're God. You've realized that you're not your body, and that's good. But you're still thinking that you're God. It's another type of illusion. So you haven't... So your Brahman happiness will go away in due course of time. How long can you get away with thinking that you're God? Not very long. I tried it. I used to be a Mayavadi. And I read a book. It was called The Book on the taboo against knowing who you are. And the book said, actually, you are God. But right now, you're playing hide-and-go-seek with yourself. You just have to come out of hiding. That's okay. This is great. Wow, I'm God. And for a couple of days, it seemed pretty good. Until things started, you know, not going the way I wanted them to go. And I realized I wasn't God after all, you see. So you may imagine you're one with Brahman, thinking everything's perfect now. I'm Brahman, I'm Brahman, I'm Brahman, I'm Brahman. But then your landlord says, well, where's your rent? You're being evicted. But I'm Brahman. I'm Brahman. You can't evict me. I'm God. I own this apartment building because I'm Brahman. See, for what you may think for a few days that you're Brahman and everything's great, but you know, your little bubble will pop, and you realize your Brahman happiness was an illusion because you're not one with Brahman, really, unless you become a servant of the Supreme Brahman, Krishna, and then you become truly Brahman realized. But you try this to become Brahman realized outside of bhakti, it's a dream, it's an illusion.
I was thinking if there is a difference in Brahman realization by achieving it during Bhakti Yoga or achieving it during personal way. Is there a difference?
Yes. When you become Brahman, when you become Krishna conscious, which is Bhagavan realization, then automatically you are Paramatma realized and Brahman realized. You achieve true Paramatma and true Brahman realization when you become Bhagavan realized, which is pure Krishna Bhakti. When you come to pure Krishna Bhakti, you automatically have Paramatma realization and Brahman realization. They're included within it. You have genuine Brahman realization and genuine Paramatma realization.
I have a question to this, if there's no really happiness in Brahman. But in the 12th chapter, I think the second verse, Krishna says, Amrit Yasyasi Yasyacham, that this impersonal aspect, unmanifested aspect, Brahman, is the source of ultimate happiness.
Yes. The Bhagavad, I know the Gita says that. Brahmano pratishtaham. Yes, it is stated that it's the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. In the Bhagavad Gita, but in the Bhagavatam, Aruya Krishchena Purang Padam Tada Patantyato Nadirta Dushmanangriyaha. It's stated there, Avishuddha Buddhiya. What is it? Vimukti Maninas. It is liberation in the mind only, it is not genuine liberation. That's stated in the Bhagavatam. So both statements are true. But it's not really the Bhagavad Gita conception only really becomes true in the ultimate sense when you become Krishna conscious. To realize that it's a very subtle thing to get in. We could discuss it from many angles of vision. Very subtle thing. It's also stated by Prabhupada that Vimana realization, one realizes the eternity aspect of God and Paramatma, the eternity and the chit feature, sat and chit. And Vimana, Bhagavan is sat, chit, and ananda. So ananda doesn't really come to the Bhagavan level. So one could ask then, what is the ananda then of Vimana realization that Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita? What is it? Well, it's the happiness of knowing that you're not the body and you have nothing you have nothing to do with the suffering of this material world. That is a sort of happiness. But the point is, you can't really maintain your position in that happiness unless you have a locus standi, you have a solid position to stand in. You can take off in an airplane. But you run out of gas after a while and you have to come down for landing again. Unless you can take shelter on a different planet. So, that Brahman realization does get you out of the material miseries, that's a fact. But unless you're qualified to go to the Krishna planet, you have to come back down to it again. Therefore, it's only temporary, therefore it's not really true happiness because it's only temporary. That position to be beyond the modes of nature, yes, we agree. But the point is, unless you become a devotee, you can't maintain it. You must come down again to suffer in the material world. Therefore, even though it is the conscious position of ultimate happiness, Unless you have the means of maintaining it, your idea that now you're liberated is false. It's illusory. Just like many years ago when I was preaching in our Dallas temple, there was one boy, inmate from the prison, low security prison, maybe 30 miles east of Dallas, and he got a pass, a weekend pass, to come to the Sunday Love Feast. So I drove out to the prison, I picked him up, and brought him to the Sunday Feast. You see? So he was out of jail, wasn't he? Was he really liberated? No, he had to go back to jail after the, you know, after Prashadam, he had to go back. Kirtan, lecture, Prashadam, and back to jail, you see. So was he liberated? No, he was still an inmate. But because he got a weekend pass, he felt liberated for a little while. Of course, he was really liberated because he came to the temple. And then, that's another matter. But try to understand the mundane example. So the Brahmavadi, he has a weekend pass to get out of the material nature. And he feels liberated because he's out of the prison. But the problem is, it's only a weekend pass. He has to go back in to the prison. They come; the Brahmavadis fall down again into material sense gratification. Ahruya krishchena parang patam tatat patanti yadho, they fall down again. So even after all that endeavor of achieving Brahman, you have to fall down again. What's the use of it? You may think you're liberated. But you're not. So therefore it is, but it isn't. Happiness. Transcendental happiness. So why take such an iffy position? Why not just become a devotee? It's so much easier. Do you realize you can't... a man who has passed samana even once in his life cannot achieve Brahman realization? So why bother for it? You know, unless you're a nice tikka brahmachari, then you could think about it. But even then, it's not worth it. Even once having passed, even in your sleep, having passed samana, even once in your sleep, then you cannot achieve Brahman realization. So, instead of crying, oh, I can't achieve Brahman, no, just become a devotee, then you'll get Brahman realization very easily. Just by taking prasadam, you see.
How do you feel the Brahma realization?
How would you feel it?
How do you feel it like a devotee?
Brahman realization means I'm not the body. I'm indestructible. I'm bulletproof. Somebody can shoot me with a gun, they're not going to shoot me. It means you're convinced that you're not going to die. You know that you're eternal. That's for a devotee, that's Brahman realization. He's absolutely convinced that he's eternal. He has nothing to fear from birth, death, old age, and disease because he's eternal.
That is not the Bhagavan. That's also Bhagavan realization.
That's included within Bhagavan realization. A Bhagavan realization means you understand that you're the eternal servant of Krishna. The only way to be solidly situated in Brahman is to be situated in Bhagavan realization. Because otherwise it's only theoretical. I am Brahman, I'm not this body, but then what do? You have to eat, you eat unoffered food, so you're just keeping your, you know. To make it practical, you have to have Bhagavan realization. Brahman realization is theoretical only.
But actually, I have written in the purport that Prabhupada said, sometimes you fall down. So not every time.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Where does he say, sometimes, you show me?
In the purport, when he talk about the Brahman realization.
No, the actual reality is 99.9% they fall down.
Yeah.
Okay. I will agree with sometimes, but... that sometimes they fall down, that sometimes is 99.9%. It's only very rarely that one can go from Brahman realization to Krishna bhakti. I mean, the Kumaras did it, Sukadev did it. But there, I wouldn't think, well, I'm going to do that. I'll just be a Brahmavadi and, you know, not going to chant Hare Krishna, I'm just going to meditate on Brahman. Good luck. You know, Sukadeva was in the womb of his mother. He couldn't see any sense gratification. He had no facility for sense gratification. Kumaras, they had not attained puberty. They weren't carried away by sex desire because they intelligently kept themselves as little brahmachari, little infant boys, you see. Young boys, but pre-puberty boys. As soon as you get attain puberty and you become attracted to women, very difficult, practically impossible. If there's any attraction to the opposite sex, of course you don't have any attraction to the opposite sex, but none of us do, right? Any attraction to the opposite sex, you can never become a monogamist. Look at Vishwamitra Muni. He got all the way to the samadhi stage in the Ashtanga system. And Indra sent Menaka there, you see. All he had to do was hear the sound of the anchor boys and, oh, a woman has come. A woman. I've been lonely up here on this mountaintop. Oh, a woman has come. Let's check her out, you know. That was it, finished. He was highly advanced. Yogis, they meditate on Paramatma. Actually, they also want to merge in Brahman. Prabhupada explained sometime by them. Both the yogis and the jnanis, they both go after Brahman, actually. Yeah.
I saw that a yogi who is meditating on Paramatma, he goes... Uh-huh. I saw that the yogi meditating...
Yeah, but they think they are the Paramatma. They fall into the trap of thinking they are the Paramatma.
All the Paramatma yogis, I saw they meditate and go to Vishnu Loka or something like that.
They can't go to Krishna Loka unless their Paramatma meditation becomes overcoated with bhakti. Unless they do that, they think they are one with Paramatma. Okay. They are the Paramatma. That's what they end up doing.
Okay.
Unless they become devotee of that Paramatma, then they can move to the high, next level.
But there's a difference in Mayavadi and Brahmavadi.
Yeah. The difference is their method. But the goal becomes more or less the same in the end. Prabhupada explained, I've read in his books.
Okay.
The method is different. The Paramatma Vadis, they do the Ashtanga system. And the Brahma Vadis, they do philosophical negation. Neti, 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 neti. The absolute truth is not this, it's not that. They study Vedanta Sutra and they do very rigid austerities. And they negate everything. They just try to negate everything. Not this, it's not that. Neti, 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 neti. Not this, not that, not this, not that. The absolute truth is not this, not that. They cut away everything by philosophical process. But we say, all right, then if you're going to do that, then why don't you... Then you should reach the point of cutting away. That was a realization I had. I was a Mayavadi. Mayavadi philosopher. And I was doing that. I was negating everything. I was just going to go to... I was on my way to India to become a renuncia. A wandering beggar in the holy places of India. I decided to do them. So I was negating everything of this material world. But then one night I had a realization. That I've negated everything. And what's there left to negate? I have to negate negation. And then something said, you shouldn't go to India, you should go to San Francisco. So I turned around with the opposite direction. I was hitchhiked to San Francisco. And there they were, the devotees. Took him a couple of years, though. Took two years for my Vayavadi, my Vayavadiism to go away. Because it was my body. Once you become attached to the idea that you're God, it's very difficult to give it up. That's why Lord Chaitanya warns, Mayavadi basha shuni loi hoi sarvanash. Anybody becomes, hears this Mayavadi philosophy, their spiritual life is doomed. So it's only by the extreme mercy of Prabhupada and his servant Vishnu Janaswami that I'm here today. Because I really thought I was Krishna. The first time I went to the temple, actually, I was chanting Hare Krishna, thinking I am Krishna. Some Brahmacharini said, "Oh, you're chanting so nicely." And I was thinking, "Oh, if she only knew that I am Krishna." I was actually thinking that the first time I went to the temple. 518 Frederick, that second ISKCON temple, I went there, 1968. And I was saying, "If she only knew that I am Krishna." I was really thinking that. I was really thinking that. Because I'd read all the books. I was misguided by these Mayavadi books. The Mayavadi, I would hear these Mayavadi yogis, they would say, "I'm God, you're God, we're all God." I mean, that's all I had heard. That's all I knew, because that's all I had heard, you see. But then gradually, by the mercy of Prabhupada and his followers, I realized, and Maya kicking the stuffings out of me and making me so miserable in my attempt to be Krishna. I finally realized it was ridiculous. I had to just become a humble servant of God. Any other question? Yeah?
I have an extra question about Brahman realization.
Yeah.
So if I understand correctly, there is no chance that you realize Brahman in Bhakti Yoga before you come to the last stage of Bhagavan realization?
No. As soon as you take up Krishna consciousness, you're automatic Brahman realization. As soon as you take up Krishna consciousness, you're automatically Brahman realization. Automatically. Do you know that you're not your body?
Theoretically, only philosophically, but I don't have...
Are you engaged 24 hours a day in devotional service or not? Oh, that's the problem. As soon as you take up 24 hours a day of devotional service, then your Brahman realization is there. You have to fully surrender yourself. Now I'm a fully surrendered devotee. As long as you're sitting on the bank, dipping your toes in the water, the others are in the red lake having a great time saying, "Come on in, Matisse, the water's fine." You're going, "Well, I don't know." And you're sitting on the bank and swishing your toes. "It seems a little chilly to me. I don't know." You see? The persons who've actually jumped in the lake and are swimming and having a great time, they're Brahman realized. See? Those who agreed, "Yes, I will now surrender to a bona fide spiritual master and give my whole life for Lord Chaitanya's mission," they Brahman realized. Prabhupada actually said that. They are Brahman realized. So you have to... Right now you're sitting on the bank and swishing your toes in the water thinking, "Well, I don't know, it's a little chilly, you know." So you're not Brahman, really. But the devotees who've fully given their lives, surrendered to whatever their spiritual master orders them they should do for pushing on this movement, whether they're a householder or a brahmachari in the temple, either one, doesn't matter. You can, as long as you're fully surrendered to the order of your spiritual master, whether you're living at home or living in the temple, it's the same thing. The key is you're totally, whatever Guru Maharaj tells me to do, I will do. That's the point. Any other questions? Is everybody satisfied now? Ready to strive diligently for pure bhakti? to get rid of all miseries once and for all, forever finish all material miseries, kick Maya Devi in the face with boot. She's a pure devotee, but actually we are allowed to be in that mood. Prabhupada said, declare war against Maya. Okay then, we'll stop here. Raja Vidya, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.